This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
All right, guys. This is a really exciting time for our company. We've got, Pal World has been a huge success, and we are also a fledgling video game company, and we're going to launch with a big new IP. So I've called this meeting today to make sure that you guys get a chance to voice your ideas for what that IP could be. But I want you to think big, grand experiences. I want whatever, live services. Nothing is out of bounds. So fellas, let me hear your ideas for brand new video games.
Okay, I do have something I've been cooking. I've been thinking about this for a while. What if there is a sort of an outbreak of some kind, a pandemic of sorts that it starts from like a mushroom type fungus and it infects people and it stars this like sad like dad. Right.
Oh,
and
wow.
Then,
yeah.
And he sort of adopts this like young girl who's like a surrogate daughter. Right. And she is immune and he has to take her, smuggle her from point A to point B, basically. And point B is like a medical facility of some kind. And I think like that's just sort of like kind of what would happen in the game. We obviously fill in more stuff and there's like stealth combat and shooting and things like that.
This sounds awesome. The only thing I'd suggest is can we just add like a base building, like all that, but also you build bases?
Okay. Yeah. I mean, it could have base building. Sure.
Okay, great. I think that we should do that for sure. That's great.
No, wait, hold on. You're not running the meeting, so I don't know why you would approve the idea.
We're just blue skying in the air. We're just brainstorming.
We you can are say blue skying, and but I feel like maybe I was remiss in not clarifying exactly what it is we're looking for, because what you've just described is The Last of Us. It's just The Last of Us. So I and there are no wrong answers here. So I'll put it up on the board. What
Matt went first. I don't see how he was The Last of Us.
No, I see what's happened here.
We can move past this. All right. I think we should get some other ideas. I think that's a great idea that Matt pitched. I don't think we should kill it because it's too close to something that exists.
We're not gonna kill it. I'll put it on the board, but let's hear more new original IP.
Okay, here's what I'm thinking. What is more relatable than feeling like you're trapped? Feeling like you have no escape. Isn't that all of us today in society?
Yeah.
Entrapped by our governments, by the news cycle, by our jobs.
Yes.
And we're also being pursued by multicolored ghosts. And there's nothing we can do but move forward and continue to consume the dots in our path as we wind through the corridors, just trying to survive. Chomp, 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 until finally we get that power pellet that lets us turn the tables and eat back the ghosts.
We
have all that plus base building, and that's a game.
I was going to say, I think this is more apt for base building.
Yeah.
I think this is good. I think that's really good.
What bothers me about your pitch is that in the PowerPoint you just showed, you were using images of Pac-Man. I don't mean to sound frustrated. I'm going through a divorce.
Oh, my God.
So, I don't mean to bring that to work.
Yeah. Yeah, we should tell. We can tell Matt now. Heather and I are going through a divorce.
Oh God, that sucks. That sucks so bad.
Wait, who? You're all going through a divorce?
Well, we're all getting a divorce.
Yeah, yeah. It's that sucks. That's like, I mean, that kind of would make Joel kind of like, or you know, if there was a Joel type character.
Oh yeah, right.
Maybe it's not that somebody died. Maybe that's just like a divorced guy.
Maybe Pac-Man has divorced from Ms. Pac-Man.
Yeah.
I want to just say, I had to miss the custody hearing in order to be here. Like
you're really not.
I
supposed
thought
to miss
you guys
that
were
one.
Coming with your what?
You're really not supposed to miss that one.
Yeah, well, I had to because
we could have met on any day.
I'm thinking like a sports game, but it's got every big sport in one. Baseball, bowling, golf, tennis, and you use a special remote controller to simulate the swing of a bat, or like you're bowling a ball, or like you're swinging a golf club.
Stop.
Yeah.
Stop.
With base building.
Stop.
Uh-huh.
Stop. 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 Stop.
All right, stop. Stopped.
Stop. Stop. You're pitching a system. You're pitching the Wii.
I just want to tell you something. You cannot act like this in court.
We beat lambs with clubs and force them to work on our bases as we discuss viral early access potential IP theft bonanza Pal World this week on Get Played.
Welcome to Get Played, your one-stop show for good games, bad games, and every game in between. It's time to get played. I'm your host, Heather Ann Campbell, along with my fellow host, Nick Weiger.
That's me, Nick Weiger, and I'm here with our third host, Matt Apodaca.
Hello, everyone.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Premier Video Game Podcast. If you are joining us for the very first time, let me tell you, we are three idiot friends who just play some video games. Sometimes together,
yes.
Sometimes alone. And initially, we were only playing terrible games. But now we play every game. And this week's game may fall somewhere in between.
Again, we are idiots. We're going to say dumb shit.
We rarely ever fools. Make mistakes, but a lot of stuff we say is dumb.
We're talking Pal World this week, which we'll get to in a second. This is a big
Pal World.
I would say we're as video game podcasts go, we're not like the most like topical or zeitgeisty or newsy, but this is such a big thing that it kind of felt inescapable. And I think it also kind of in various ways overlaps with all of our gaming interests. So I felt like we had to cover it.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, we'll get into this, but you know, I like a Pokemon game,
sure.
Right? Heather likes like a sort of like a Fortnite sort of like exploration sort of game, and Nick likes bad stuff.
How dare you? I actually do like this, the aspect of me. First off, is the Breath of the Wild aspect,
yes.
Which we'll talk about, but also just like the crafting and the building. Like,
oh yes.
I love like building shit.
I can't wait to talk about it.
Like the survival aspect. We'll get to that. We should also, while we're talking about what we're going to talk about, we're here in February now, and we have our We Play, You Play format, which is, you know, we were doing it monthly. I think we're maybe going to do it bi-monthly or semi-regularly. We're not going to commit to doing it at the end of every month because that's a little onerous. But we are going to talk at length about one game for the final episode of February. I'm not sure if we set it in stone. We can talk it out here. But it felt like there were some strong leanings towards finally digging
Final
deep
Fantasy
into Baldur's Gate 3.
7 Remake. Oh.
I'll talk Final Fantasy 7 Remake or Rebirth when it's out, but I honestly feel like we should wait till Rebirth is out and we can talk at length about that game.
I think that makes sense.
No, I think Baldur's Gate 3 is going to be great. We have talked about this offline. So I have dipped back in to Baldur's Gate 3, and I refuse to restart despite the long history of what I have done in the game. I am plowing forward without save scumming or whatever it is so that we can chat Baldur's Gate 3, and that'll give us different takes also. Because
yes,
we'll have very, very different experiences.
100%. So that'll be coming the final Monday of February. That will be our BG3.
Final Monday! It's the final Monday in February, and actually going forward, February will no longer have Mondays at that point, too. That's actually a really crazy part of
it's
it.
It's a weird quirk in the calendar, but I guess because it's a leap year, they were like, well, after this one, this will be a good final Monday for this February.
Yeah.
Next year, we're back to 28 days, and I guess we'll double up on Tuesdays. I don't think they're going to figure it out.
It's so frustrating because I have read a bunch about this. It doesn't make any sense. There's going to be two Tuesdays in the future in February.
What is this bit?
Can I say a conspiracy theory?
Please.
So I believe that the calendar, the natural calendar,
yeah,
as probably practiced by like the early hunter gatherers, was probably 13 months instead of 12.
Mm.
Because if you divide 365 by 13, then every month has exactly 28 days, which also means that the moon cycles would line up with the months at the exact same time every month.
So at a certain point, they just like someone made the executive decision, we're getting rid of Smarch or whatever. We're like, you know, that one 13th month is going to take a hike and we're going to shift these days around.
Sort of like what they're doing again with the Monday.
They're doing it. Yeah, right. That's
which means that February is the lone holdover from the original calendar.
Mm.
I wonder if there's any, because obviously there's all sorts of different, you know, calendars and timekeeping systems around the globe that all kind of got standardized when we entered an era of global commerce and communication. I bet there's some truth to that. And I bet there are some calendars that are a little bit closer to the moon cycle.
As far as conspiracy theories go, this one, pretty benign,
one
I'll
most
say.
Wholesome conspiracy theories?
Yeah, so I like it. I think this one's good.
I endorse it. I like it.
That's the official stance on the Get Played podcast. We believe there are originally 13 months.
There was a 13th month.
Yeah.
I wonder when 9/11 would have happened if there were 13 months and 28 perfect days.
Right.
Probably
somebody
would have been in August.
Discord, it would it?
Depends on where that 13th
been?
Month slots
yeah,
in.
Yeah, that's true, huh? I'm adding it to the very end, but kind of pushing everything up.
Right.
Hmm.
August has its own like origin in Augustus, right? Am I wrong? Is that where that's coming from?
Know.
Or is it vice versa?
I
might
no
be the
idea.
Other way.
I should know more about calendars.
Yeah, let's maybe this year we get into calendars. I think that's pretty good for us.
Yeah.
And we'll do an episode.
Right, we'll figure it out. but this is the thing, because okay, if there's a game like Stardew Valley, which is akin to kind of the survival base building resource management day-night cycle game that we're going to be discussing at length. It different, but the same sort of general bucket. When game systems have fictional calendars, they do tend to standardize it. They do tend to be like, hey, you know what? We're not going to just take the existing like sort of dumb kludge system that we have that exists because of path dependency. We're going to instead sort of make it like, yeah, these seasons have an even number of days, and because that just makes more sense for everybody.
I think. Let's adopt one of those. I'm sick of this shit. I'm sick of daylight savings time. And you know what? 13 months? Bet you we don't have daylight savings time anymore. I bet you it's gone.
Here's my big thing. I agree. I don't like daylight saving time. Keep it as standard time year round. By the way, it is one of those things where I do love to be pedantic in general, but I love to be pedantic about this. It's daylight saving time.
Everything
There's
sucks.
No S. Daylight saving time.
Lose the S. Give us another month. Let's get this over with.
But I've thought, like, could you do like the equivalent of a metric calendar? Like, could you have a 10-hour day of 100 minutes, a 10-day week that turns into like a 100-day year? Like, could you make the math all kind of line up where it's all on the decimals?
I'm sure we could, and then the U.S. will be the only people that don't do it. We like ours.
Fuck you.
It's worse. So Baldur's Gate 3 coming in the month.
That's right. We'll talk about it then. They have a 10-day week in the Baldur's Gate universe. They keep talking about a 10-day. That's the week-like period of time.
I thought they were talking about Chance the Rapper's first mixtape.
Just looking at you blankly. I have no idea what you're talking about.
Rochelle knows what I'm talking about.
Who the what?
Rewind it back to the days of chillaxing on the beach and all-day fun with Spring Break on DraftKings Casino. Play exclusive games like FanFave Rocket. The excitement is endless, the vibes are right, and the cash prizes could be huge. New players, start playing with just $5 and get 100 back instantly in casino credits. Download the app and use code GETPLAYED to book your one-way ticket to fun with DraftKings Casino. The crown is yours! Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.1800gambler.net. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. 21 plus. Physically present in Connecticut, Michigan, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, West Virginia only. Void in Ontario. Eligibility and other restrictions apply. One per opted-in new customer. $5 wager required. Max $100 in casino credits awarded, which require one-time playthrough within 168 hours. See terms at casino.draftkings.com/promos. Restrictions apply.
Hey, buddy, I want to tell you about a new podcast you need to listen to. Crunchyroll Presents The Anime Effect explores anime and the way it shows up throughout our world. Hosts Nicholas Friedman, LaAlec Murray, and Leah President discuss the latest in news, updates, and deep dives on the shows and pop culture you love. From breaking down the anime awards to analyzing Godzilla Minus One to discussions with musicians like Yeji. Stay up to date on the latest in anime with Crunchyroll Presents The Anime Effect. Hey, for me, I'm interested in hearing them talk about One Piece, because I've been getting into One Piece myself. And they're also talking about The Boy and the Heron and Studio Ghibli movies, things that I love. Final Fantasy VII Rebirth they get into. They do some gaming content. Kaiju Number 8, that's a manga a lot of people like, that is turning into an anime. We'll see how that adaptation is. So listen now. Wherever you get your podcast, Crunchyroll presents The Anime Effect. Let's talk about some video games we're playing now. It's What Are You Playing?
What are you playing? Oh. It's where we talk about the things that we're playing.
That's right.
I expected, he's been around lately, so I expected the Resident Evil.
I kind of thought he would too.
I thought he might show up, but I honestly don't. Like, I thought I saw his car parked outside.
Yeah.
What?
What
kind of car does he drive? I haven't seen his car.
Well, I saw like a burned out car outside.
Okay.
And I thought like, just that's the kind burnt of thing he would have, yeah, he would have driven.
Yeah.
The blackened husk. But I guess that wasn't him.
Yeah. Technically like the shape of a car, but it is just ash.
Yeah.
Like, no, and I'm, you know what? And it's, I don't think mentally I could handle it today.
It'd be a lot. I'm sure
today's more of chill vibes.
It's chill vibes. He'd have his own take on the calendar system, which I don't need to hear.
Every day is my birthday. Shut up.
Oh, come on, dude.
Every day is your birthday? Relax. Come on. Get over it. Every day.
I really hope that he doesn't listen to the show.
No, and if any of this did get back to him, I would be pretty upset, actually, because I wouldn't say this to his face.
Do you think he knows how to listen to a podcast?
And for those of you that don't know who we're talking about, of course, the Resident Evil 4 merchant. He stops by. He's a regular fixture on our show. Usually,
yeah, he'll pop in usually to introduce the segment. Well, he'll pop in often and irregularly to introduce the segment.
Yeah.
Not usually.
To varying degrees of success, too, yes. I would say. I will say, more often than not, the segment is introduced. But it's, you know, always at the expense of our time and the listener's time, and you know, sometimes we learn a little too much about this guy, but
not here today. We're just gonna get into it. Matt, what are you playing?
I'm playing Final Fantasy VII Remake, and I'm about 10 hours in. I'm in chapter like 7 or something. And I gotta say, I'm loving it. I'm loving it. I talked about it a little bit last week, and I was saying that I was already more interested in it because I had already finished the original Final Fantasy VII. And that's still holding true. I love my guys. I love that squad. That's a good squad so far. I'm really happy with everybody.
Who do you partied up with at this point?
Right now, I'm running around with Tifa and Barret. And I like that you can switch between... This type of game is a little more my speed, because turn-based has never really been my favorite.
Yes.
But, you know, it's sort of an action RPG. It's more really just an action game. The RPG elements are not really, like, front and center.
Although there are still, like, menus.
Yes,
like,
a there's lot still, of menus.
And you can just, like, pause. Like, basically, it's kind of real-time with pause. Like,
yes.
You can kind of stop the action at any point. But I do think they did an amazing job. I mean, that's what I like most about the game beyond just like its kind of general like aesthetic majesty. But is just like I thought they did a great job of hybridizing, you know, kind of old school slash MMO style combat with like a modern action game, character action game. And so it's very playable, but also very approachable if you're like coming from an RPG school and don't really play these games.
I was really lost in a good way in one of the weapon upgrade menus. There's like these like clusters with like little stones on them or whatever, and you can
the materia.
Not the materia, the like where you can go into. It's like it's a sub menu for the weapons, and you can it's like stats
oh,
for your
right,
weapons.
Right. I'm trying to remember what that was.
And
exactly.
I was having a blast in there.
But you're not slotting materia into that.
No, but you can slot materia into your weapons. But it's that's a different menu.
Yeah.
Things got so many menus. I'm thinking maybe the Cheesecake Factory made this game.
Right.
But anyway, folks, what else? What else? I'm just kidding. But I'm really enjoying it. And so far I haven't gotten to, because I know the full game hasn't been spoiled for me. Right. Because I know that the full version of the full remake hasn't been spoiled for me. I know that some things are different and some things are, you know, unique to this experience, but I haven't gotten to any of that stuff yet. So,
and we should just reiterate for anyone who missed it that you recently finished vanilla Final Fantasy VII for the first time.
So, I'm aware of that stuff, and there are a couple things. Like, there's a complete guy in the remake so far that I was like, he's not in the other one. This is like a new guy. But he's like a weird sort of fancy motorcycle guy. I think he's new. I don't think he's in the original. I can't remember what his name is.
Yeah, you played him more recently than me.
But I was like, I'll be seeing him again, I'm sure, because you fight him and then he goes away. He doesn't die. But I'm playing that, and I've put away Prince of Persia for now, even though I was really zipping around loving that. I got a bunch of new upgrades and stuff. And so it's made traversal a little more fun, I'm getting into some deeper places, but I had to put it down for now because I'm focusing on, I would like to finish Remake before Rebirth comes out, which I think I'm on pace to do, but I just needed to guarantee that I would. So I had to put down Prince of Persia, The Lost Crown.
I finished Remake when it came out, and I was just refreshing my memory looking at this upgrade system. I remember this now. It's like, it looks like the solar system.
Yes.
You've got like all these cores that you're using, and it's just like which attributes of the Buster Sword or what have you want to upgrade.
Exactly, yeah. So I was having a blast doing that because I realized I had all these stats, all these stat points I could spend that I hadn't spent yet. I was like, oh, and that was making things a little easier.
What
like,
a great feeling that is.
This is great. But I also just love how it looks. It's a really beautiful looking game.
It's so beautiful.
So gorgeous.
It's so beautiful.
It's nuts. Like, I really am looking forward to Rebirth, but I'm also like, Cloud is like buff in a way that I'm like, could I do that? Could I become like shredded kind of like Cloud?
Right.
I love a thin buff.
Yeah.
Like a
and
wiry,
I feel like
yeah.
When I see Cloud, I have the same feeling. I'm like, could I become like a Cloud type body?
Yeah.
Could I, like the lumberjacks on TikTok?
Yeah.
The female lumberjacks on TikTok? Like, I'm like, is that achievable?
Right.
His he's really attractive in Remake.
I was like, if I looked like Cloud, I think everybody would like that. I think everybody would like that.
Puts on a dress too.
Yeah.
Looks great. I just don't have the body type where I could be that lean and wiry. Also, like a famous short king, like that's a big part of Cloud.
That's why I'm thinking I might be able to do it.
You could pull it off. But I feel like I'd have to get up. I'd like bulk up and be like a Barrett type. Mm-hmm. I'd have to be like a little bit just sort of like just pure body mass.
Okay. Nick immediately starts sawing off his arm. I'm just going to do it. but I'm loving it. And I can't wait to see what else. I can't wait to see where the, because I don't even know this. I don't know where the story stops. Like, because I know it's.
Yeah.
They're splitting this one game up into three games. So I'll be interested to see where it stops and what else is maybe a little different. But I'm loving it. That's it for me.
I love that you're loving it. Heather, what are you playing?
So, you know, I'm playing this month's We Play, You Play. And I don't want to save this for the actual episode because I'm going to experience a lot more after this. But it's been so long since I've played the game that I don't remember any of the characters or why they're upset at me. So diving back in where I am is the same as starting a playthrough of Disco Elysium.
Mm.
Like I am confused about the dungeon I am or what my goal is in that dungeon. I don't remember how any of the menus really work either. So I'm like reorienting myself while also being attacked by like spiders and gremlins and shit. And then also I don't know why one of my party members is dead in the dungeon because I don't remember the dungeon because it's been I think the last time I played it was the summer.
Can you generally describe the dungeon? So do you know where you are exactly
in a dungeon?
No, just like the environment, the atmosphere, like what kind of dungeon it is.
Don't all the dungeons in this game kind of look the same?
I think they're get pretty distinct. I mean, maybe in Act 1, some of them look similar.
Bricks and rubble. No, I mean, definitely in Act 1.
Yeah.
But they're like bricks and rubble and ladders and candles.
What kind of enemies are around? You're dealing with goblins?
They're all dead.
Oh, they're
all dead. All the enemies are dead.
Okay.
Because whatever I did last, I killed everybody.
You maybe cleaned out the goblin camp. That's maybe what happened. I'm just guessing, but I don't know.
Goblin camp. I don't know. Well, I feel like that's not where I am.
Okay.
I'm underground somewhere.
So maybe you're in the Underdark. You can get into the Underdark pretty early. There could be, are there like, spiders? You're dealing with spiders?
There was a spider.
Okay. Yeah. That's probably where you're at. You're probably underneath the Blighted Village.
But isn't the Underdark like Avatar looking?
It is. There's parts of it that are more Avatar-y that have more like bioluminescence, but also like the Underdark is like this whole like it's like the lower level of Tears of the Kingdom.
Whereas
basically the depths, yeah. It's like this entire, thank you, Matt. It's like this entire like other biome, and there's little chunks of it that you can get into in Act One. But the end of Act One is where you spend like the bulk of your time there.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I have no
Could
idea.
Could be. I don't know. Does Rochelle have a guess?
I've definitely been in the Underdark. I don't know if I'm in the Underdark currently because I was like, oh my God, this is like, it's like the fucking glowy spaces in Elden Ring. I'm like, oh, this is crazy. And I do remember getting absolutely murked by like a floating head in the Underdark, which is not where I am currently.
Right.
Like, I'm not where the floating head killed everybody.
Floating head, the beholder, that was the big one-eyed guy.
I don't know, some kind of floating head. Okay. Just like looked at me and like it like party wipe.
I think that's
like,
what
looked
probably
at
what it
my
was.
Party and party wiped me. And there were like statues of frozen people.
Yeah, okay. That's exactly what it is. There's like a big beholder you fight, giant one-eyed creature, and then there's like there's petrified drow.
Yeah, I'm not there. That's a different part.
Got it.
I don't know what dungeon I'm in.
Got it.
Anyway, so that's, I dipped back into BG3, and of course, I'm playing Fortnite, which continues to be a delight. I have, from the Discord, realized a couple of things. One is, the Discord that we have of our Get Played listeners, And there is a subsection of that Discord, which is at discord.gg/getplayed. The Fortnite subsection is, I've always referred to as the Battle Bus, but it is not. It is the Battle Buds. Mm-hmm. They're the Battle Cute. Buds. The Battle Bus is what they what we all travel on to start a Battle Royale.
Right.
But the Battle Buds are the group. So I just want to say, I want to extend my apologies for always calling it the Battle Bus, which is what I thought it was called, but it's Battle Buds.
Battle Buds.
But anyway, yeah, playing Fortnite, which is great. There are no current collaborations beyond The Weeknd, who I think signed on to be like the spokesperson of the entire season. But his skin is not selling well.
Oh, I saw
a breakdown of The Weeknd sales skin, and it was a few weeks ago, and it was something like 2,000 sales. Which for a game as big as Fortnite, you'd be like, oh my God. And now he is relegated to the bottom of the item shop, like beneath cars and songs. Like, he's way down at the bottom. You never really see him in game.
Did he? Is this all like post the idol kind of like, you know, his star's fallen, or did he like say something political or something? Or like, what do we have? Is there any theorizing?
I think he's maybe his star has fallen a little bit. I'm not sure, but the kids aren't playing as The Weeknd. And neither am I.
The kids usually love The Weeknd because they're not at school.
Matt, that's a great point.
You would think they'd be playing as him more.
I'm so fucking tired, man. I'm so tired.
Heather and I, our old improv group was called The Last Day of School. Mm-hmm. And we had a Facebook page way back in the day. And at a certain point, I'd never looked at this thing, but our buddy Judafonso Marks, who managed the page, was also on the team, part of the group that performed at the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater in L.A. He noticed at a certain point, we just started like just swelling in terms of followers and had like millions of followers at the
really?
Time when that was like kind of not a common thing.
Yeah.
And we realized what was going on was that it was a bunch of children who were just liking the concept of the last day of school. And so we'd have like a post about a show, and then some like 6-year-old would comment, homework sucks.
That's
it
so
also
good.
Was funny because like we had our cast photos up on the which also still has millions and millions and millions of likes and followers or whatever. We would have cast photos up, and the comments on the cast photos would be, who the fuck are these guys? Like,
that's excellent. So, that is so good.
Yeah.
I do think The Weeknd did say something like bad, like in some article came out about him that he's like mean or something like that. But I did go to Halloween Horror Nights a couple years ago, and I go every year. But a couple years ago, he was one of the featured mazes. Like, the concept of The Weeknd, the artist, was one of the mazes, and it was very strange. And at one point, there's like a music video where there's like a bunch of him. So there's like a, you know, a mirror room or whatever, and there's a bunch of guys with like bandaged face and stuff. And that's like kind of scary or whatever.
Yeah.
But inexplicably, like at the end, there's like a big bug.
Okay.
There was like a big, like praying mantis, like bug, and it was like, it's bigger than you're thinking. It's like, it was like a guy on stilts. Like, it was huge. It's like 12-foot big bug, and we were just like, we weren't even scared of it. We were just like, what is this? Like, what is this? Why did he do that? The artist ones are always so like hit or miss, because either they're like super into it, or they have like a horror angle already. Like. They used to do it with more like metal musicians, like Ozzy Osbourne did one before. Slash had one.
Right.
There's a more of a logical step into horror, a Rob Zombie one. But then The Weeknd, you're sort of like, I guess he's just kind of like a weird guy.
Yes. Yeah. It doesn't really make any sense.
But that's
Nick.
My answer.
Nick, what are you playing? Did we ask you what you're playing?
You did not, and I'm going to answer. What I'm playing is Baldur's Gate 3, which I'll talk about today. And then I won't talk about it again until we do our We Play, You Play. I'm going to continue playing this campaign, though, because I am basically on to Act 3. I know where I am on the story. I'm in the prelude to the final encounter. I won't give any spoilers there of the second act. First thing I want to bring up, I don't think I've talked about shovel yet. I don't mean the shovel you use to dig with. I mean the NPC shovel, who you find a scroll that you can summon, that if you have a wizard in your party, they can commit the scroll to memory and they can endlessly summon Shovel the Quasit, this little fiend who runs around and is the most I've just thought of a Heather Ann Campbell character just being in a video game, because she is just a little misfit who runs around just like, fuck you. Like, it's just like this profane little like shithead who like wants you to get hurt and stuff, and goes into combat and says, it's fisting time.
Oh my God. Like,
Jesus Christ.
I hadn't seen this person or this creature before. Yeah. And I just Googled it, and it's exactly what I pictured.
It's great.
It's such a perfect...
Like a little gremlin, has their own dialogue and everything, and is also, like, useful, which is another thing I think this game does well, is when something is fun, it's also useful. It's like, you know, it can turn invisible, can cast fear on enemies, so it is pretty useful and fun to just have around in the party. But I hope the two of you, in your respective playthroughs, or if you get back into it at all, do come across Shovel. So we can talk about it a little bit in a couple weeks. I am romancing Gale on my current playthrough.
Wow.
I have gone for Gale. Let me tell you this. Gale's a little bit of a tough nut to crack. I thought at first, like, he's being very kind of like flirty, and you can kind of like banter back with him. And,
yeah.
And when you pick like kind of the sort of playful option, he tends to yes and that. And that's like it's like a fun way to interact with him. But there's a point pretty early on where he's showing you the weave, which is like the magical energy that, you know, it's essentially the force, I guess. It's an oversimplification, but it's basically that. He's like showing you this magical energy that unites everything. And as he's doing this, like, you have a moment where you can choose to picture something. So I picture my character, like, kissing Gale. And I'm like, here we go. This is a big fat signal.
Yeah.
I'm using semaphore here.
Yeah.
And Gale's like, oh my goodness, a surprise to be sure, but a not unpleasant one. No, I simply must get back to the library. Like, he's like, gets so like scared.
Yeah.
And so you go through this whole thing where it's like this really prolonged courtship period where like there's a point in, you know, there's a big triumphant moment in Act One where you can have romantic scenes with a number of different characters, depending on how you played the game up to that point. If you're going after Gale, your choice is to sit by yourself and think about Gale. Like, it's like he's not even engaging with you. It's really one of those things where I'm like, I've developed a lot of empathy for anyone who's ever tried to date me, because it's like, okay, hey, I'm interested in you. Oh, cool. I'm going to go lock the door to my dorm room.
I'm going to go play Resident Evil 1.
So all that said, I'll eventually reach the point where I went to the next stage in our romance, and I really do like that. I did like how it progressed. I found it like very satisfying, and I think his character is really interestingly written. They're all interestingly written, but like contrasting that versus Lazelle, who at the same time is like coming to me in the middle of the night and is like, I'm here to claim you. I'm like, man, they are really at completely opposite ends of the spectrum here. One small thing I missed on my first playthrough that is in Act Two, which I really liked. I was like, oh, man, I'm really glad I'm just playing this again in kind of a similar sort of way, because I just somehow just didn't come across this. They're just overwhelmed by all the content that I didn't notice this thing. There is a drow in the Moonrise Tower, mm-hmm. who is specifically wants to be bitten by a Starion. And is like,
yeah.
So you encountered this.
I did. Yes. And so, I had to go back and bring him with me.
Well, this is the thing. Yeah. And I like this about the game versus like something like, you know, in BioShock, you have the choice where you can just pull one example. You can harvest the little sisters or you can free the little sisters. But ultimately, like the advantage you get from one choice or the other is kind of like the same. It's like it's essentially neutral by the end game. So it's like you don't actually have a moral dilemma there. It's just however you want to play it. Here, in this game, there are actual kind of moral dilemmas or things where, like, you can get a clear benefit to gameplay, but what you're losing is you're either upsetting a character or you are, like, for instance, there's another thing you can do where you can disfigure the player character but get more advantage in combat. So, like, it's just, like, am I trading off the aesthetics of looking uglier, for lack of a better term, for just being more powerful? And this is another one like that, where Astarion, like, does not want to be, does not want to bite this weirdo, does not want to feel, like, fetishized as a vampire, does not want to be, like, I know that this just feels creepy to me, don't make me do this. But if you do bite her, she's going to give you a strength potion that will permanently boost your stats. So that can be a significant advantage for one of your martial characters. So it is like a real trade-off. I chose not to do it. But I think there's a scenario where I was like maybe struggling with this game more, or was like playing on honor mode or something. And I might do that. And that, like, I don't know. I just find that kind of interesting, that there actually are situations like this where there's a clear advantage to choosing the worse option, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's like, I'm remembering, because when I encountered this character, Astarion was not in my party. So I was like, oh, I'll bring him over here so we can progress this this conversation. And then I went back and he was very clearly like, I don't want to do this. And I was like, okay, we're not doing
this. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I brought you over here just to see what
you're
my
guy.
Was.
I'm not going to upset you. For this horny drow.
you can bite me at night. I'll let you bite me at night. That's fine. You don't have to bite anybody you don't want to bite, buddy. So no thank you. But what a, I miss my guys, actually. I got to get back in there.
It's really cool because it's such a small, like, could just be a throwaway interaction, but they make a meal out of it as they do everything in the game. Okay. I do want to get through a few. Maybe I'll save these, actually, because I have some frustrations with the UX, but that actually feels like something we can all dig into in the We Play You Play. Yeah. I'll save these thoughts for later.
I did also, at one point, romance Gale on accident and, like, had the full, like we fucked.
Yeah.
And then everybody, well, not everybody, Shadowheart was really sad. Because we were also sort of like on our way to romance, and I did save scum and like regretted it, and I felt so bad. I was like, Gale will never know, but I'll always know.
So in my playthrough, I hooked up with Lazel because she just is like let's go. I was like, all right, sure. But then Gale gets upset about that.
Mm-hmm.
And again, he's just there. He's like so like mopey and like so unattractively like self-pitying, where he's like, well, I suppose I could have been more forward, but I can only be myself. I'm like, dude, come on.
You fucking Frasier ass. Yeah. You bitch. But he's also, he told me he loved me, like, right away.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Yuck.
I know. I was like, okay.
A lot of red flags with Gale.
Yeah.
I had some interaction with Gale where he was like, do you want to try magic or whatever? And I was like, okay, sure. You know, cause I'm playing just the most obnoxious, straightforward, selfish, narcissistic thief.
Yeah.
So we do it, you know, some magic scene, and it gets kind of like sexy adjacent. And afterwards he's like, oh, did you feel that? And I immediately selected, yeah, it was gross. Get away from me.
Yeah.
And then from that point forward, I was like, I don't like or trust this guy. And he told me his whole deal, which I don't want to spoil yet because we're not there. We maybe have to save something for the actual episode. He was like, so would you do that favor for me? I was like, absolutely not. So at this point, in my playthrough, he is, I think, starving to death.
Oh my God.
Which is going to leave me with only my party as my characters who are in my camp. Remember when Border Patrol separated thousands of refugee kids from their parents, deported the parents back to their home countries while keeping the kids in the United States? Well, believe it or not, there are hundreds of families who have still not yet been reunified.
Although we as a community may feel hopeless at times, I recently learned about an organization called Al Otro Lado, which works to reunify families. They provide holistic legal and humanitarian support to refugees, deportees, and other migrants in the U.S. and Tijuana through a multidisciplinary, client-centered, harm reduction-based practice.
They've reunified over 100 refugee families ripped apart by Trump's zero-tolerance policy. Once reunited, Al Otro Lado helps each family to find legal representation, housing, and counseling that they need in order to heal and get on their feet.
Imagine having your child ripped from your arms and never knowing when you would see them again. We can't let family separations go on. If you're like me and believe that all families belong together, then join me in supporting Al Otro Lado and donate today.
You can find the link to donate to Al Otro Lado in the description of this episode or go to gum.fm/charity and donate today. You can also consider volunteering with the organization, which offers opportunities that are both in-person and virtual. The best way to get involved is by filling out an application on their website at alotrolado.org/volunteer.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Let's get into PAL World. So, PAL World, developed and published by Japan-based Pocket Pair. A little bit of a tongue twister. It's an early access on Steam and on game preview on Game Pass. They are slightly different builds, so there's a little bit of different content. We all played on Steam, depending on if you're playing the Game Pass version or actually buying it on Steam. It is an open world survival game where you capture pals that are just Pokemon, but they're pals is what they're called in this game. And then you have them fight alongside you and or help build and support your base. And it is an instant, enormous hit, the biggest hit of the year so far. As of today, Pocket Pair, the developer, posted, as of today, this recording, it's been less than 2 weeks since PAL World was released. Thank you. Steam, 12 million copies. Xbox, 7 million players. It reached the, so it'll be over 20 million players by the time this episode comes out. It reached the second highest number of concurrent Steam users ever. So number two. In terms of number of Steam players at one given time. Does anyone want to guess what number one is?
Yeah, I know what it is.
You know what it is.
It's got to be PUBG.
It absolutely is PUBG, wow. Heather. You're correct. Number
Fuck
one
yeah.
with a bullet. And PUBG peaked at 3 million players, over 3 million players on January 13th of 2018. But PAL World is significantly behind it at 2 million, but still a lot. The rest of the top 10, I just thought this was interesting. CSGO. Counter-Strike Go, Lost Ark, Dota 2, Cyberpunk 2077.
Wow.
At the peak of its launch, basically, even though everyone was mad at it. Elden Ring, New World. Forgot about New World. Remember New World?
No.
It was an MMO that was maybe free on Amazon Prime or something.
Oh,
really pushing it for a time, and I think it was a kind of a flash of the pan thing. Hogwarts Legacy, and then finally Baldur's Gate 3. Pretty impressive for a single player. A game that can be played offline.
Wow.
Do you want to guess? Because Fortnite is not a game that's on Steam.
Right.
So these statistics aren't available on Steam because it's, a separate play service. Do you want to guess at the peak number of players in a single day that Fortnite had?
PUBG's at 3.2 million. I'll say 6 million.
I'll say...
Matt, you got a guess?
I'm going to go 9 million.
Okay. In June 2021, according to ActivePlayer.io, Fortnite peaked with 31 million concurrent players.
Jesus.
Fuck. That's staggering.
And its total player count, like the total number of people who have played... Fortnite over time is something like 240 million people.
It's really just, I guess, on a completely different level from everything else. I don't know if PAL World is going to get there when it's released retail, but it certainly feels like one of the stronger candidates we've had so far to just sort of like kind of take that level of prominence. But then again, maybe it won't have the staying power. Maybe it'll be a little bit more of a right now sort of thing.
I want to look up concurrent Minecraft players.
Yeah, Minecraft's its own. I mean, Minecraft's probably the actual champion. Okay, so speaking of Minecraft, this game borrows heavily from Minecraft in terms of, and other, and, you know, also like building survival games, just in terms of resource gathering, building a workbench, using that to build tools, using that to build other structures, you know, refining ores, upgrading what you have. One of the things you can craft is the Pal Sphere, which is essentially their Pokeball and functions exactly like a Pokeball.
Yes.
It's like one to one. And that's a big thing about this game, which it borrows heavily from Pokemon. Not just that the PAL, what they call Pokemon, the PAL characters are designed very similarly and have very similar abilities to Pokemon, but also just like the way that PAL spheres work and the way that, that they're trapped in a sphere, the way, you know, like it's like all the elements that surround it are also commonalities with Pokemon.
The PAL box where they can be stored, yes, the PAL decks that like logs them, like that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's all just like pretty straightforwardly just borrowed. And also I think just as much borrows from Breath of the Wild in terms of the gameplay. The towers, which are a big thing of it, like, you know, just like that as landmarks in the and on the horizon, something you can run to and use to unlock fast travel. The font is very Breath of the Wild. The map looks very Breath of the Wild. Yeah. And then also the music, it's got like this sort of like tinkling, jaunty piano that kicks in combat encounters. Like, this is just like straight up from Breath of the Wild.
Yeah.
I will say that the music of Pal World, by the way, we keep calling it a Pokemon like, and that's not the first time that has happened in history. Like,
sure,
Digimon
yeah,
is just Pokemon, and it's like literally, I mean, like even similar names, like naming convention. But the thing about Pal World that illuminated something about Pokemon for me was the music in Pal World is not great, and the music in Pokemon is so fucking good that like hearing it is rousing, you know. Like,
totally agree.
Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I will say that of the things they've copped from other games, I do wish that the, as long as you're ripping stuff off. And again, maybe, I don't even know if we're talking about ripping off. Like, if you make Lies of P and people are like, this is a Souls-like, that's fine. But if you make a Pokemon-like, people are like, I don't know about this.
Well,
this makes me grumpy.
Right. I think it's the interesting thing because inspiration is such a huge part of creating any sort of, you know, artwork, anything creative, is you're drawing inspiration from something else. The one of the first things that successful artists get to ask are, who are your influences? Mm-hmm. But I think there's kind of an unspoken thing, or maybe it is spoken, of just like, you can't be too, you're not supposed to be too obvious about it. You're supposed to be like, if you're making the souls like, you shouldn't call what you're gathering souls and have campfires that are your rest. You know what I mean? It's like all these things should change up a little bit so that like you can see that the bones are there, but the specifics aren't what's borrowed. But here there basically are just Pokemon who look, or I'm sorry, pals who look exactly like Pokemon, who are just very directly like, this is this. And I think that's what makes it feel like. What was the Super Mario Brothers ripoff that was a lot? Super Giada Sisters? Like, that's
Crash
what makes
Bandicoot.
It kind of feel like that. but I don't know. But it's also to you. But I don't know if I mind it. It's so weird. I said to you as we were playing together last night.
That was something we did. We did get together in the same server and played together. And
that was fun.
Pretty fun.
But I do kind of feel this way of like, this game rips. Like, it's very fun. It's really well designed. It's super engaging. And also, it feels like the developers should be in prison. Like, it feels like a crime. But also, maybe it's okay. I don't know.
I'm interested. I mean, it's kind of tough because obviously there's been a lot of discourse about it online. And, like, there's a lot of talk about one of the developers in particular, I think, mentioned like AI as like a positive thing. And so people kind of glommed onto that and were like, this game was made with AI, which there's no evidence to suggest that that's true. That sort of took over the discourse. People were like, the game's bad, it's AI. And then the other part of that was, we don't know that that's true or not. There's no, they didn't say that. But it's also like, even Pokemon weren't like, original. Like, yes, like the way that they you know, exist in the world of it all is like unique. But like a lot of early Pokemon designs share similarities with, I guess, like Dragon Quest monsters. Like it's like everything is inspired. Everything comes from something.
You're sure, yeah.
But I don't know what my larger point is, but it's just interesting that this is the thing that, like, and it did get, it came across Nintendo's desk or Pokemon Company's desk. They had to release a statement because so many people were being like, are you going to do something about this? And their response is yes, but probably not. It doesn't seem like it's like that big of a fish to fry to them.
Well, okay. We talked about this while we were playing. I think, Heather, you might have brought this up, that what Nintendo should do is buy this company.
Yes.
And be like, what the Pokemon company should do is buy, you know, this developer, buy out Pocket Pair and be like, we're going to have you develop or use what this is as a prototype for the next sort of Pokemon game. Nintendo's not going to do that because they're not that kind of company.
No.
But that's the kind of thing where it's just like, I think a big part of why this game is so successful right now is that people who play Pokemon, Matt, you can probably speak, yes, you can definitely speak to this most specifically, have kind of been starved for like a good new Pokemon game for so long.
Yeah.
And this is something that's actually trying something different and is actually exploring the IP in a way that, you know, it's kind of in its own rut over under the Pokemon company's stewardship.
And I there is a hunger for exactly that, like, yeah, for something to take it into the next level to I thought we were getting it. I thought that Pokemon Legends Arceus was going to be the thing that like we would be seeing going forward, and it almost could be, but they kind of took a step backwards with Scarlet Violet and went a little sort of, it was more open world, sure, but it's like, it's bad. It was like a bad version of it. This, I'm like, I like the idea of this. It was very playable, like, right away.
Is your iPad lock screen Final Fantasy VII art?
Yeah, I love that.
You're FF7 pilled.
I'm
FF7
pilled. I'm getting all these notifications, too. I'm just blowing up. Everybody's trying to get a hold of me. But I'm saying, I don't love a survival game. I don't love like a crafting, building thing. I like if it's part of it, sure. If it's like part of the game, yes. But, you know, maybe if I spent more time in Pal World, I would get to see that there's more to it than that. But the start of it, there's one, we talked about this yesterday when we were playing, not great onboarding for playing the game.
No, it's pretty, there's a very, I mean, again, it's an early access. Yeah. So yeah. I'm sure some of this polish is coming, but yeah, if you're not familiar with how these games work, it's a little bit of a trial and error to figure it out. And it has a tutorial that a bunch of bullet points, but it's not very elegant.
No, but I will to speak on that for a second too, because Heather had to go when we were playing. And then Nick and I were playing for a little while, and I was like really focused on gathering materials, and I was just like getting materials and putting them in a storage box, kind of running back and forth doing that for a little while because I wanted to just build a lot of stuff at once. And then Nick kind of goes away for a little while and comes back, and he's like wearing clothes and has weapons. I was like, what did you do in the same? We had the same amount of time. he built a house and had clothes. I was like, what are you doing? This is crazy. But I could see, I understand the appeal of these types of games. I've never really played Minecraft. I've never played Roblox because I'm not six.
Yeah.
But I understand the appeal because like it was very calm. It was very meditative. I liked the sounds of making things. That like there's always like a good.
It does have good sound effects for that. Yeah.
But like running around and seeing the pals, I was like, well, I've seen this already, kind of. But I also kind of don't care that they look similar. That's not enough to me. Like some of them look pretty similar and like is like pretty like, oh, I don't know if they should have done that. But it's not. It's also not this like edgy sort of like, because everyone's advertising it as Pokemon with guns, and there are guns in the game, but like,
which is jarring.
But I also like don't. I don't know. I don't care.
Yeah.
I want to talk a little bit about so Minecraft and Lego Fortnite,
yes,
are the same. They're the same fucking game, right? It's the same. You go up and punch a tree until you have enough wood, and then you build a bench, and then you can make a pickaxe, and then you can chop the tree and get the wood faster, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And that's what Pal World does too. And that's like a whole genre of game.
Yes.
And I have been thinking about the popularity of these games and the divorced structure of capitalism between labor and achievement. And I think the reason these games are popular is because people are doing things in the real world and seeing a full separation between that, the thing they're doing, and the goal that what they are doing is supposed to achieve. And I think that also, like, DIY people on TikTok are becoming sort of fetishized. Off-grid living for millennials and like building farmsteads. Like, all of this is a response to this alienation people feel when they do their job and then nothing happens. Like, you do a spreadsheet and you don't achieve the vehicle, right? Does that make sense?
No, it does. It's a great observation, and I think you're right. I mean, it's just like your work is intangible. I mean, this is not exactly what you're saying, but I'm thinking of when I worked in game development. There was one of the programmers I worked with was an older person, and he'd worked for a bank, just developing bank software for like 20 years before he was like got into game development because he'd always loved video games, and he was like, a big part of why I like this is because there's an end point. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like I'm making something, even if I'm not even making something I like, I'm still like, I'm finishing something. I come out at the end of this with something that I've worked on, in the same way that, yeah, in one of these games, it's like, there are a lot of jobs that feel so intangible and insubstantial, but in one of these games, you are building things, you are constructing things. Yeah. There are clear results for your labor. I think that's a great point.
Yeah, you'll go, like, the reason you would go home and relax by doing work on a video game is because you've spent all day hyper-normalizing the fact that you aren't really working.
Right.
You're, like, organizing as part of a huge, you know, invisible conceptual conveyor belt towards product, or even not even towards product, towards financial management of product. Like, financial management of somebody else's capital. So of course you'd come home and be like, holy shit, I can punch this tree, get wood, and make a bench. And I don't have the physical space capable of... I also think that that's why, and I won't speak about this because I don't like talking about other people that I work with, but I think that's why my boss, Dan Harmon, who's been on the show before,
yes,
has graduated from Minecraft to physical woodworking. Because it was like, there's like a stage of experience that we're all lacking. And so we're like driven towards these games. Now, I fucking hate Minecraft, Lego Fortnite, and Pal World. Because what I'm missing is not the physical process of building something. When I want to like scratch that itch, I'll like build actual Legos, or I'll like build actual model kits. What I'm missing is the sort of like explosive, joyful competition between people that you like and people that you admire, and being able to lose to them or win to them or win over them. And I don't get any of that in any experience in the real world. So I'm constantly refreshing battle royale experiences because I'm like, I want to run a race and have that physical experience of a race being run against people, and maybe they win and at the end you high five them, or maybe you win and at the end they high five you, and none of that is happening in the modern world. I've been thinking about this a lot since we started playing Pal World, because I was like, why do people like this?
Yeah.
Because I can't, the last fucking thing I want to do at the end of the day is go back to work on something. But also, I physically just want to be a writer, and all I have to do to achieve that is to type, and then the script is there. It's like a one-to-one experience. Mm-hmm. Like, and beyond that, like, the process and the production end of writing for television is less important to me, because my goal is not to make TV shows. It's to be the writer.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have that valley that I'm trying to fill up, that chasm.
No, I get that. So, I think that is I think you're kind of in the to your earlier point, in a semi-unique position where you have a job that you find satisfying. Like both creatively and, you know, professionally.
I love my job.
Exactly. Yeah. And there are a lot of people who are, I've been reading this book, coincidentally by David Graeber, who passed away. It's this great book called Bullshit Jobs, I think is well known. But it's all just about, what's that?
David Graeber also wrote, what is it called? The Beginning of Everything? What the fuck is that book called?
He has a bunch of books. He has a book about debt. I can't remember what it's called. The Bullshit Jobs is like all about the kind of, you know, management oriented or, you know, purely a superficial jobs that exist that a lot of people occupy. Like, I'm just here to fill a chair because society has decided that I cannot be idle. And so I just am given a task, even if this task is to no end. So from that standpoint, I do get the appeal of a game like this. But also, I will just say, speaking personally, I really enjoy Pow World. I think it's great. And I love this type of game. I love building in games. I've always loved building stuff. I loved playing with toys and building stuff as a kid. I loved any sort of video game, like any sort of simulation game or strategy game where you can build things. I still like those kind of games. I like base building as a mechanic. I like when there's an RPG and part of it is here's a town I'm building. I always love that shit. I always love those sub games. And I think it's all stuff that exists in other games, just sort of like its own spin on it. But I think it's all well integrated here. So I absolutely get the appeal of this. And I'm going to have to uninstall this game because I'm going to play it too much. And I've got other things to do, like play Baldur's Gate 3. But it's like this is absolutely a thing that got its hooks in me very like immediately. And I totally see the appeal and I get why people like this game. I want to go back to the character designs real quick. Rochelle, I have this link. This is an IGN thing. This is a Pow World versus Pokemon comparison, just how similar are the designs. This is a little thing they compiled we're going to look at in the room here. But this is just, we'll see some of the side-by-sides of some of these characters. And for a lot of these, as you're playing the game, you don't even need the side-by-side. You'll just see them. But we're kind of going through these here. We can just kind of click through the slideshow. I don't know which Pokemon that is, but this, the Pikachu, there we go. The Pikachu and this pal, the electricity pal, the electricity rat. That's not even one of the more obvious ones. The Charmander and the, Foxfire? What's this guy?
Vulpix.
Vulpix, yeah. Yeah. So yeah, we see where the Charmander and the Vulpix, and then whatever the Pal equivalent of is, which is kind of like a hybrid of the two of them.
Yeah.
And is also a fire type. This one is like very. This is just whatever their penguin is. Tough. Also, I think this is another thing. They have like they have a duck like Pal that is called like Fwak.
It looks like fuck.
So. It's just F-U-A-C-K.
Yeah.
And I just kind of can't believe they just put that in a game.
The penguin is Pengullet.
Pengullet, yeah.
And that kind of reminds me of Magician Pen Gillette.
That's another issue.
Doesn't the penguin look like, though, doesn't the penguin look like a Bomberman type character? I feel like there are other games like Bubble Bobble.
Sure.
That have very similar designs to this penguin. And though, like, it does, you can put it side by side with the Pokemon and be like, look, they're kind of the same, but that penguin looks a lot more like an 80s or 90s video game character design than it does specifically.
Yeah. Go ahead. And also, how many ways can you make a cartoon penguin?
This is what I was going to say. Yeah. I think it's like, it looks like a penguin because it is.
Yeah, but there are ones that to me are more similar. Look at the Snorlax alike, which is like a sleeping cow, and you see it has the exact same expression, and then also the only difference is that on the Snorlax the teeth are upturned, and on the Pal cow, a sleepy cow, they're down the teeth are downturned. Like that one seems pretty blatant. Again, I don't even think this is like necessarily the worst thing in the world. Maybe it helps it that you can completely understand as shorthand who it's supposed to be from a gameplay standpoint. But I don't know. It is there at least. It's I think worth commenting on.
This
The Meowth, too, is, like, kind of similar.
Yeah, the Meowth is, like, it's pretty close. I guess I'm sort of, like, being mad about this is boring to me. Like I understand.
Yeah, right.
Like, the concern and, like, on paper, why that's bad. Like, if it's, like, if they're stealing it. But if, I think if they were stealing it and it was an issue, we never would have seen it, I think, or it would be gone by now. Like if it was like a big problem.
Nintendo is so litigious. They routinely take down fan projects that are being made for no money.
Yes.
So a game that is being sold digitally for $30, they would they would totally send the clamps down on them. Maybe they will eventually, but I don't know. This is a little thing from gamesindustry.biz. This is a little, they collected some quotes from lawyers just about this. I'll read this real quick. Unfortunately, the line between influence and infringement is not as clear as gamers or developers might like. Absent a direct theft of assets, characters, textures, or similar, we're left asking whether the designs themselves are substantially similar in those areas which can be protected. So not vague shapes, colors, or even proportions, but specifics, which as you can imagine is largely going to be in the eye of the beholder. It's a gray area, but not one that really advantages the rights holder, especially if they don't want to run the risk of seeming like the bad guy or setting a bad precedent. So, like, I maybe this isn't actionable, but there's also an element of when we're talking about rights and we're talking about IP, so often everything is set up to advantage large media companies over upstarts.
Yes.
And again, it's the kind of thing of like I don't know. I tend to be have a little bit more of a, let's say, open mind, because that's the wrong use of it. But I tend to have more of like give more leeway for something like this, just because I think you don't want things to be too restrictive in terms of what someone can create.
Yeah, like there will be other games that come out that will have similar mechanics to Pokemon and similar designs. It's just gonna. Like, there's, I don't know, it's like a type of game.
Yeah, it's like you see, it's when you see like a pop star sue another pop star for having the same chord progression in a song. And it's just like, at what level are we kind of like just limiting what people can do, you know? Yeah. I don't know, I don't fucking know.
If there was like almost a one-to-one Pikachu, and that Pikachu was saying like, fuck, and like had a gun and stuff, Nintendo would be mad.
They would be mad.
And I would think that's more interesting to me, too. I'd rather have seen that. Like,
like a Conker Pokemon?
Yeah. But, like, I liked my experience. I liked running around. I did eventually like building stuff. When I saw that you were putting up the house, I was like, I'll put this wall with the door here. And I think that's a good spot. And then,
no, we were collabing. That was fun.
Yeah, that was really fun. We couldn't really figure out how to put the roof on.
So yeah, I put the flat roof on. I couldn't figure out how to. So some of it's a little quirky. I couldn't figure out how to put the slant roof on it. But while we're talking about playing this game and playing it together, so Heather, with this starts off, Matt and I are kind of like near the starting area, and I'd played some on my own. We're all playing together. We're all starting from scratch.
I'd like to clarify that I put in a significant amount of time on my own server or on my own island, like built a bunch of fucking shit, employed / enslaved the pals and put them to work.
Right. After Nick says this, I want to circle back to the thing that you just said.
So when I played with Matt and Nick, I was like, well, I have different goals right now because I've played the game as it's meant to be played, clearly filling out the chart of to-dos on the corner, like upgrading my base to level 7, capturing 30 pal, like all that shit. Like I did, because I'm like, okay, I want to be able to talk knowledgeably about the game. So, but when we joined our own server, I played as Nick is about to describe.
Yeah, so I played some on my own too, but we're all starting from scratch together in the beginner area. Matt and I are scouting out. This is a server with a bunch of other players. So Matt and some of the prime real estate is claimed for bases. So Matt and I are scouting out, like trying to find a place to set up a camp. Heather says, I'm going for that tower, and just makes a beeline sprinting.
Yeah.
I think crafts a stick you can use to hit things with.
A club. And it's yeah.
All right, I have a club. I'm going to the tower, and just sprints for the furthest landmark on the horizon. And so Matt and I are just like, okay, I found some, there's some trees over here. We might want to set things up over here. You know, we're just kind of like talking logistics, and Heather's like, I'm fighting a boss.
I entered a tower, which is a gym. Like, it's just a Poké gym. Like, there's an introduction of a woman and her Pokemon, who is the Pikachu Raichu style Totoro fucking electric mouse thing. And you're in an Elden Ring style arena with, like, you know, places to hide and this fucking Pokemon is running at you and she's riding on its back, which I appreciate. And it was blasting me with electricity, and I was a level one naked lady with a club.
Yeah.
And realized that it had 30,000 HP, and I had when I had hit it and then run, I had done 30 points of damage to it. So I had a 10-minute time limit, and there was absolutely no way I was going to be able to conquer this boss. But I played until I died, which I didn't know was a thing that you could do in Pal World, is that it finally hit me once and immediately executed me. And it was like, give up? And I was like, okay, yeah, I'll press X to give up. And my character just goes, ugh! And like lays down prone on the ground. And I was like, oh no! Is that, and then you can respawn and start over again. But yeah, I get to see a boss fight and what that looks like. And I assume, because again, you can carry pals, multiple pals with you, and then you would deploy them against a boss like this in order to help do damage alongside you. And I think it was four other people were allowed to be in that raid style boss encounter. Since I won't be playing this game again, I'll never know what happens after you beat that boss.
The combat and you know, I didn't fully explore using pals in combat, but I did unlock some things. Like there's I can't remember the name of it, but there's some specific items you can craft, some specific accessories that interact with specific pals. So for instance, there's one that basically it's like Pokemon style. You throw a pal ball, pal sphere, and then you can have that companion fighting on your behalf, and then you can recall them when they get low on health or it's fighting the wrong type and swap them out for someone else. But there's an item you can get where one of them is just sort of like, who's kind of like a dark unicorn who follows you around, will just like be out at all times. So you can have them just like kind of like floating around like a familiar and then toss out another pal at the same time. And so like that adds to like your moveset. There's also another one you can like craft a harness so you can ride the boar like one around like a mount. So like there's some like cool shit in here that just lets you explore the game in different ways. And I don't know how much of these things are in modern Pokemon games, but it certainly felt like it's like, oh, okay, these are adding layers to this relatively simple combat.
There's no crafting in Pokemon. There's no, like, you can have one like walking around with you. Like, that's sort of like a new feature, or like there's Pokemon in the overworld, so you can throw a Pokemon out and like sort of just have it battle while you're walking around and stuff. Like, that's kind of fun. But that's kind of it. You can ride one that's like, but it's like your key item Pokemon. So it's not really in your party.
Right.
But Heather mentioned earlier that like you can put some of these, you can put your pals to like work.
Yes, 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 right.
And I've seen a lot of people obviously talking about like, oh, well, actually, the world of Pokemon, it's basically the same. It's basically, you're like their master, and like you're putting them to work, and you're making them fight, and like that's bad too. It's just a game.
I think it's,
dude,
there's something it's not even really real. Disturbing about punching a pal.
Yeah, you can punch him in the back of the head.
Right, you're not just fighting them with other pals. You actually can physically strike them with your hands or other weapons.
Mm-hmm.
And it took me a short amount of time before I realized that you could construct weapons. And then I was like, oh, this is great. Axe, bow and arrow, let's go. So my first encounters with pals were, and I was playing with a controller, is running up and just punching them in a submission.
Yeah.
And then it was like, weaken the pal before you throw a pal sphere. And I'm like, okay, I'm familiar with that mechanic. What I didn't expect is that you can beat them to death.
Yes. Yeah.
And yeah. Then you can't capture them, which also you can feed pals to other pals. Mm-hmm. So like you can get lamb mutton from the lamb pal, cook it, and then give it to a different lamb and it eats it and it makes it happy. And I'm like, this world is dark.
Yeah.
And the first NPC that you encounter also sort of echoes that. That NPC is like, this is a horrible world. I've seen so many people die.
I think she said, this place is hell.
Yeah. And then you talk to her again later and she's like, I was dedicated to building a cemetery to my fallen friends. But when I reached 100 gravestones, I stopped. And I'm like, what? Like, it really leans into this sort of like inferred darkness of Pokemon and just puts it up front on display.
And yes.
It's fucking, yeah.
At least in Pokemon, like, once you make a Pokemon faint, they'd like disappear off the screen. But pals, they just lay there dead.
Yeah, their corpses just ragdolled out. And then, yeah, maybe there's some you know, wool and meat that's strewn about where their corpse is. Yeah, it does make it, just that, because that's the thing in Pokemon. I mean, there's like, I guess, Slowpoke tales or whatever. But it's like, you're just sort of, you're not, just kind of not dealing with the meat of it all. But here it's just sort of like, these are animals. We, you know, make some fight on our behalf. We make some labor on our behalf. And others we kill and eat for sustenance. It's like, I guess it does kind of, it is a stronger comment, I guess, maybe, I don't know how intentionally, a stronger comment on our relationship with the animal world.
I don't know that I'll spend more time with it. I would, there are things in it that I would like to see in other Pokemon games. I would like them to expand on the Legends Arceus format, which is sort of like their Breath of the Wild format, kind of where it's, you know, you can throw Pokeballs without going into a battle. You could throw Pokemon out on the field and they could just walk around and stuff. That's great. All that stuff's great. I love that. If they wanted to introduce crafting, if there was a need, a want for that, sure, fine. Because I liked building stuff. That was pretty fun.
Yeah.
But I don't, was it the Pokemon Company that released a statement? It was them, I believe. They were sort of like, we're looking into this, but they didn't seem like they were worried about it, because otherwise they probably would have been like, we would have heard about that already. If they were like going to actively be suing them or something, it'd be happening.
I think they've realized they can just put out some like chunk of sludge every year, mm-hmm. and it'll sell like gangbusters. Yeah. And keep making money hand over fist. So that could be the reason for their just sort of laissez-faire attitude towards this. I'm going to read this little.
I mean, there is a possibility, and we talked about this while we were playing, mm-hmm. there is a possibility that can change. Like, mm-hmm. in the same way that nobody watches Looney Tunes cartoons anymore. Nobody's like, oh, where's the next Bugs Bunny cartoon? You know, there was a series that was on for a short while that everybody loved. But generally speaking, it's not an IP that people are like, oh, my God, we've got like. I don't even think Space Jam 2 was a success, or 3, whichever one it was.
It was 2.
Don't
will a third into existence. We don't need another one.
So there's a world where Pal World could become so successful that it sort of like overshadows and eventually replaces Pokemon. I don't think that's going to happen, but there is like a version of this where it's like, kids could play a better version of Pokemon with more options and building and crafting and you know, multiplayer servers and all that shit.
Yeah.
And then they would go back to that stripped down experience on a Switch and be like, I don't like this.
Yeah, 100%. I think there's a chance that anyone born after 2000, like, all they know of Bugs Bunny is the Lord help me, it's time to go back to the old meme. But yeah, at a certain, for there was a point where Bugs Bunny was like as big as Mickey Mouse, was like this huge icon.
Yeah.
I want to end my thoughts just by reading this a little bit from a Forbes piece, which I thought was, I don't know, I think kind of just captured what a lot of people are thinking. The title is The Pokemon Game I've Wanted Since 1999. I'm not especially sure how to review PAL World in the traditional sense, given that it's an early access game with no development end date in sight, and aspects are very clearly unfinished. And yet it's one of the most fun games I've played in the last year, which, yes, includes all of 2023's bangers. The game has gone from the meme of Pokemon with guns to genuinely being the type of Pokemon game I've wanted to see out of Nintendo for 25 years and have never gotten.
Wow. I mean,
that's depressing.
Yeah, how long do you want something before you like just give up?
Yeah.
But it is interesting. I think people do want it, and obviously people are playing it, so it is like something that there's a demand for. So if there is a lesson to be learned from this, it would be really funny if this game that's being accused of stealing Pokemon, Pokemon just like, we're just gonna do that, we'll just do what they did, we'll do it. That's you know, probably the more likely thing to have happen, I think.
I was here a little early, and Marty from HeadGum came up to me and was like, all right, Nick, what's the deal with PAL World? I think it's enough in the zeitgeist where people are just like, what is this
and
thing?
He like grabbed you by your shirt collar and pushed you up against the wall, right?
You're still a new fish here. Yeah. Tell me what PAL World is. You're
one
out the door.
Out, had you bent over it, spanking you. Tell me about PAL World.
Rochelle, have you messed around with PAL World?
I watched a playthrough.
Yeah.
Before this episode.
You're a Pokemon fan, yeah?
Casual.
What did you have any thoughts?
It looked fun.
Yeah.
I do like those building games though, so I feel like I would be into it.
What's your favorite of the genre?
I've been really enjoying Lego Fortnite.
Okay, so
wow, there you go.
I did get in there a little bit. I like the way Lego sounds. You were talking about sounds a little bit earlier. All the Lego game sounds are really
they
good.
They are good.
Yeah, they're so
like some of the
good.
Best sounds in games. Unbelievable.
All right, I'm going to play Lego.
It's good. Yeah, I think you might like it.
It's really
exactly,
good.
Heather, your mom liked it, right? Your mom was playing it?
My mom plays Lego Fortnite so much that she is on Fortnite. She is a higher level than me.
Wow.
Because your account levels are sort of like universal.
Yeah.
So if you play Lego Fortnite all the time, like she's like, I think close to level 200 or some shit from playing fucking Lego Fortnite. And I play Battle Royale and the racing game, Rocket Racing.
Yeah.
And and I'm level like 104.
Wow.
Like it's for people who like that experience, it's a very good version of that experience. And I agree. I think Nick would love it.
Okay, great. I'm going to do it. I'll report back. Shall we do a segment?
Let's do a segment.
Segment.
I don't know what to call this, but I have a placeholder name here, and we'll see what you think about it.
Yeah, Matt has a new segment, then Heather and I don't know what it is, and anytime this happens, I'm always terrified.
Yeah, I think this one's normal.
Okay.
I think this is a normal one. I'm going to say the name of a video game, and you're going to tell me if it's a real video game or a made-up video game from TV, movies, or games within games.
Oh, that's fun.
This segment is called
Real
or Fake.
It's just called Real or Fake?
That's what I came up with.
Okay,
I don't
great.
Have a better name than that.
All right. Well, that can be kind of just like the idea that gets us the idea.
Yeah, that's what I said. I was like, we don't have to call it that. I was more focused on making sure that the concept of the game was normal.
Like fictional or fictional?
Yeah, maybe fictional or fictional is better than real or fake.
Like a nested fictional. It's something fictional within a work of fiction.
So these are either real games.
Yes.
Or fake games
right.
from TV movies or
right.
games within games. So here we go. The first game, Tongue of the Fat Man.
Weiger, I think this might be a real like weird 3DO game or something.
Heather, do you want to? Well, that's not fun. Do you want to?
Fake.
You want to say fake?
We can both guess, then we can, like, you know, if we both get the same thing and we're both right, we can get a point or whatever.
That's true. Okay. So it is a real game. It was for the Commodore 64, DOS, and the Mega Drive. It came out in 1989. Tongue of the Fat Man.
Do you have any context for what the gameplay was?
No.
I'm going to look it up.
I do not. So Nick has a point. I'll get that there on the board.
It's a great title.
Yeah.
I wonder if it was a text adventure.
Oh, I wonder. That is interesting. I'll let you look that up before I move on to the next one.
No, you can keep going. I'll give an update.
The next game on my list here, Beatman.
I'll guess that's from a work of fiction. I'll guess that's from a movie or TV show.
I'm gonna guess real.
Okay, Nick is again correct. Nick, for an extra point, would you like to guess what it's from?
Beatman. Rugrats.
It's not from Rugrats. It's from American Dad, from the episode Stand Time.
On Family Guy, they're often playing real video games, is the thing.
Yeah.
But it's interesting they fictionalized an American Dad.
I know. I'm sure, but I can guarantee you.
Have you ever seen the double dribble bit on Family Guy?
No.
Man, it's so funny. It's just like Peter's playing a double dribble. They're like, all right, I think he's playing against Quagmire, and Quagmire's like, you're not gonna use the bug to score every time, are you? He's like, no, of course not. I'm playing it straight up. And then there's like a bug in the game where if you run to the corner and shoot a corner three, like it goes in every time, just so you hit it at a certain angle, just like an automatic, like 100% field goal percentage. And so Peter just going like, no, I'm just going to play it normally. Corner three.
Peter is so funny.
Yeah.
He's so good. Here's the next one.
I have killed Peter Griffin so many times.
Jeez, Lois, this is the worst than that time I got killed by Heather Ann Campbell in Fortnite.
Tongue of the Fat Man was a fighting game.
Oh.
Can you believe that?
Wow.
Never would have guessed that that's what it was.
So, yeah, so I guess kind of like a clay fighter, sort of like a tongue-in-cheek, sort of like a, you know, cheeky sort of fighting game.
All right, here's the next title.
Looks like shit. Sorry, keep going.
Spanky's Quest.
Fake!
Yeah, this feels fake.
It's real, and it's from the Super Nintendo. It released in 1991.
This is one of those things that I've noticed about Matt's guessing games is that I can often finish them with 0 points, which is statistically unlikely.
Yeah, they're a challenge. Spanky was a little Hansei Zaru, Jirokun no Daiboken. Literal translation is Monkey Reflections. But they localized it as Spanky's Quest.
Here's the next title.
So it's a little ape kid running around.
A little ape kid.
Yeah.
And then Nintendo was like, sweetie, we have one of those. And his name's Diddy Kong. Put Spanky away. This next one, if it moves, shoot it.
Well, I know this is a book. I'm going to say this is a fake game.
What do you think, Heather? If it moves, shoot it.
Real.
It is real, and it was for the Amiga.
Hey!
Heather's on the board. Still anyone's game.
Is it?
Nick's has 2 points, and you have one. I still have a few more here.
If it moves, shoot it, a shmup.
Right. Yeah.
Shoot 'em up for Amiga. Some of these Amiga games looked amazing. It just had this really cool palette.
Here's another title. Burger Boss.
Ah, God, I keep saying fake, but I think this one is fake.
Real.
Nick is correct. Burger Boss is from an episode of Bob's Burgers titled Burger Boss.
All right.
Here's another one. Goblin City.
Fake.
I'm going to say real.
Heather is correct. Goblin City is from an episode of Yu Yu Hakusho, episode 81, Let the Games Begin.
Wow. Look at how cool this looks. If it moves, shoot it.
That looks amazing.
Yeah, that's really rad.
Ooh. Last one. We could either tie it up or Nick can win. Attack of the Mutant Camels.
I'll guess real.
So I have to guess fake strategically because there's no, if we both get it right, then I still lose.
Right.
But if I get it right, then we can tie and I can go home with my pride.
Yeah.
So I'm going to say fake.
It is real. Released for the Atari in 1983. Nick is our winner.
Wow. What was it called again? What are the Attack of the Camel?
Attack of the Mutant Camel.
Attack of the Mutant Camel. I got to see what this looks like.
Can you imagine a freakier looking camel? Those things look already insane.
That's right.
They're big humps, smoking cigarettes.
This game looks like shit.
This is dog shit.
So that was, what did we land on? It was fiction or fiction?
Okay, there was an Atari 8-bit for the 8-bit computer that looked a little bit better. Had like some, like, I don't know if that's some early parallax or something like that, but it kind of looks, has a little bit more. It's still crude, but it looks a little bit better than the Atari 2600 version. I guess it was on Commodore 64, too.
Well, damn.
And either way, it looks like the gameplay is you are a camel and you walk from left to right. And it costs $60.
The original
Enjoy.
Strand game. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Oh, well, that was real or fake or fiction.
We'll come up with a title. That's a great segment. We should do that again. That was a lot of fun.
Kind of fun.
Yeah. Hey, that's this week's Get Played. Our producer is Rochelle Chen, yard_Sard on social media. Our music is by Ben Prunty, benpruntymusic.com. Our art is by Duck Brigade Design, duckbrigade.com. Also, check out our paywalled show, Get Animated, where we continue through the Netflix series Pluto.
We're watching Pluto on Netflix. I'm just echoing what you said, but normally you throw to me on that, so I felt like I had to say something.
No, I thought that way. I thought maybe it would be kind of organic, like I'd just say it and you could chime in. But yeah, maybe I should have teed
Well,
you
how
up.
About this?
Yeah.
How about I tell our listeners? You know, we're covering one episode. These are very thick episodes, so they are about an hour long each. So we're covering one episode per episode of Get Animated, and you can find Get Animated up on our Patreon, which is patreon.com/getplayed.
And that's also where you can find our entire back catalog of pre-HeadGum Get Played episodes. So you get both those things either individually or as a bundle, patreon.com/getplayed.
And guys, I think this week we got palled.
We did get palled. That was nice.
Hey, thanks.
Punch! Punch! Punch!
Oh! Ow!
That was a HeadGum podcast.